Did you know that as more people listen to WNYC on the internet, our bandwidth expenses go up? Please do your part to support WNYC's online services. Click the ePledge button to make your gift now. And thanks.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Time and time again, the Democrats want to have it both ways. They talk tough on terror, but when the votes are counted, their softer side comes out.
Their softer side comes out. President Bush from a Republican fundraiser in California this month. And with that, we continue our 2006 election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. Issue 23, a defining issue in American politics ever since September 11, 2001, is either party weak on terror? This has been the main political advantage for the Republican Party since September 11, 2001, being seen as strong and labeling the Democrats as weak, or as the president had it there, soft. It helped in the 2002 midterm elections when even a war hero like Senator Max Cleland went down to defeat, largely on a weak on terror charge for supporting continued union representation for Department of Homeland Security employees. This year, the detainee and surveillance programs are at the heart of the debate, along with borders, ports, and how to see the war in Iraq. The polls have long shown Republicans with an edge on fighting terror until this month. For example, the Newsweek and CNN polls had Republicans with a 5 to 10 point lead on the issue in August. Their October polls have Democrats up 5 points in one case, 7 points in the other. And for the first time, President Bush gets a slightly negative rating for his handling of terrorism, 50 to 48. Is either party weak on terror? We will get two views in a minute from in a few minutes from Democratic Congressman Gerald Nadler of Brooklyn and Manhattan. First, from J. Michael Barrett, fellow in Homeland Security at the Manhattan Institute Center for Policing Terrorism. He previously served as senior analyst for the Global War on Terrorism in the Special Operations Division of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and as a counterterrorism intelligence officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency. Mr. Barrett, welcome back to WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So you're a think tanker, not a Republican Party representative, but this has been such a staple of Republican politics in the last three election cycles. Do you think Democrats as a party are weaker on fighting terrorism than Republicans?
Well, I think that there's two sections within the Democratic side on this. One side seems to believe that there really isn't that significant of a threat. And obviously, if you don't think that there's much of a threat, then you're going to be a little bit weaker in terms of where to invest on it. The other side, and this is actually, I think, where the mainstream Democratic Party is, believes that there's a threat. They agree that there is a risk. They're just not sure how aggressive we should be to counter it. And I think that's where Senator Clinton and Pelosi and even the Representative Nadler that you're having in a few minutes, I think that's kind of where they all come down. They have objections to the Patriot Act, and yet they expect intelligence to somehow stop the next attack.
So if the Democrats take control of Congress, do you think they would pass laws that would leave America more at risk of another terrorist attack inside the country?
I'm afraid that that is the conclusion I end up coming up to. I certainly don't think that we've done everything right in the war on terrorism. And, you know, Iraq, in my mind, is a bit separate from that, but it is certainly involved in that issue now. However, you know, at the end of the day, we need some law enforcement ability to be really aggressive on these issues. I was an intelligence analyst, and the first thing you have to have in order to be an analyst is information. And the Patriot Act and some of the other legislation is aimed very much at getting that information so it can be analyzed.
Some Democrats will argue that they are for many of the things that you mentioned, but with the proper constitutional checks and balances. So, for example, for surveillance with the use of the FISA courts, not without, for interrogation of detainees, but not with methods that go against American values and produce bad intelligence anyway, they would argue. And so they'd say the president's approach actually leaves us weaker. Here's a little of what Senator Hillary Clinton, who you mentioned, had to say in her debate with candidate John Spencer last week.
I have always advocated giving any president the tools to fight and defeat terrorists, and I continue to do so. I have supported electronic surveillance and wiretapping.
And you mentioned the Patriot Act. She went on to say in that answer that she voted for the Patriot Act when it was first introduced, and she voted for it again when it was renewed. So how would you argue against her position saying that she's strong?
Well, I think it's interesting to look at the, you know, the specifics behind it. I mean, anybody can vote for something or against something, but it's really about setting the right tone. And you know, I literally was involved in domestic counterterrorism efforts, and everyone talks about in this open debate you have about FISA taps, for example, there's an awful lot of people who have never been involved in the process who will tell you that it's very simple and it's almost too easy to do some of these kinds of taps. And I'll tell you, it's not at all. I mean, these are very difficult to get. People look at the fact that they rarely get turned down as indicative that they're almost always approved. Well, they are almost always approved because they're rarely asked for. And so it is more complicated and more difficult in practice than it sounds in, you know, in talking points.
I don't remember. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just going to say, you know, the reality is that these are good, honest Americans who work at the NSA and CIA and other agencies. And they, you know, they're very interested in protecting Americans' first liberty, which is the right to life.
I don't remember the actual number, but I seem to recall a rather large number when the Democrats argue that the FISA courts have seen so many requests for surveillance and hardly ever turned any down. It was there have been a fair number of these over the years, haven't there?
There are, but it depends on how you count them. So a lot of them are tied to the same case. So a lot of times it tends to be ex post facto. So it's people that we've already identified as having done things that we are pursuing them for. And then multiple warrants because, you know, people use and they use landlines and they use different, you know, they might be involved in 10 different companies. So the numbers look pretty high. But the reality is, I mean, you know, again, I can just tell you, I can't tell you the details, but based on my own experience, looking for domestic terrorist threats, it is actually fairly difficult to get it through the bureaucracy. And I think that we have to, you know, lean in the direction of protection as opposed to leaning in the direction of hoping that it doesn't happen.
So those are some areas where you and many Republican Party elected officials say that the Democrats tend to be weaker on terror. Now I'm going to flip it around and give you some of the arguments on which Democrats say that Republicans are weaker on terror. And so let me go down a list and get some responses from you. They'd say the war in Iraq was so tangential to the real war on terror and so badly carried out that, as the National Security Estimate says, it has served as a recruitment tool for Islamist terrorists worldwide, and so we're more at risk than if we had not gone to war to be so tough, the Democrats would say.
Well, that one is, you know, that's one where people of good intellect and honest approach, you know, feel very bad about the situation. I do agree, actually, that Iraq was tangential in terms of terrorism. I do think you could make a legitimate argument that it was a national security issue, and I do think that is what the administration in general tried, although there were certain advocates who tied it to terrorism more closely than it needed to be. The concept was, if there's a nation state out there that is acting like a rogue state, and they have weapons of mass destruction, and it's not just the U.S., the U.N., everybody believed, A, that Iraq was a rogue nation, and B, that they had WMD. I mean, they'd used them, so there was certainly every reason to believe they still had them. If you believe those two factors, then the question becomes, do you believe you need to preempt them or not? Now, there's certainly plenty of arguments we can have about how the war has gone since then. And yes, it's been terrible. And yes, we probably have created more jihadis as a result of our actions. But, you know, the other aspect of this as we're running up to an election is, what would the Democrats do that's different? How would it be better?
All right. We're going to put you on hold, and we're going to get you on a better line. Obviously, this one's breaking up a little bit. This will just take a few seconds, and we'll continue with J. Michael Barrett, who is a fellow in Homeland Security at the Manhattan Institute Center for Policing Terrorism and a former analyst with the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Defense Department, also co-author of the book Securing Global Transportation Networks, published by McGraw-Hill Professional. It's issue 23 in our 2006 election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. Is either party weak on terror? Our next guest, when we finish with J. Michael Barrett, will be Democratic Congressman Gerald Nadler of Brooklyn and Manhattan. So the next question on whether the Republicans are weak on terror, and J. Michael Barrett is back with us, is that the Democrats would say getting as authoritarian as the president has gotten on civil liberties and the Geneva Conventions plays right into al-Qaeda's hands, showing the U.S. not to be the benevolent democracy that we claim it is. Have you heard that?
We have heard that, and, you know, I think that there are certainly issues like that. You know, people say, well, we don't want to be un-American and are dealing with the threat. And I think, unfortunately, times of war call for sometimes extreme measures. And I think that, you know, these are legitimate issues to have a public debate on, and I certainly don't want to say that we shouldn't have the debate. I think we need to decide as a country how real do we think the threat is and how are we willing to deal with it. So, for example, when we talk about, you know, how are we going to do interrogation, I think some of those issues need to be hashed out. I will also tell you that, you know, from my understanding, a lot of the issues were dealt with in classified committees on the Hill, and then when it becomes public, people, for political reasons, say, well, we're not sure that we understood what was going on.
So you're saying Democrats supported these things in some cases until they became public?
Well, not even just Democrats. I mean, I think you had some of that as well from the other party as well. I mean, I think both sides sort of said, well, you know, we weren't really sure some of the things that were going on. Another thing that I think is important for listeners to understand is, you know, these are new issues. So, for example, the fact that the Supreme Court came down on one way about the Republican interpretation of legal authorities, you know, the administration interpretation of legal authorities with respect to courts, you know, these are new issues. This is law that has not been, there is no case law for a lot of this. And so it's understandable that you're going to write opinions and sort of have differences of opinion, and they have to adjust based on what the courts say.
Here's another one. Democrats, and again, some Republicans, would say the Bush administration has showed that they are ideologically so committed to free markets that they would put our ports at risk. You remember the Dubai Ports World controversy from earlier this year, leasing port operations to a government-owned entity from a government that we don't trust with respect to terrorism, rather than keep it in safer hands. Where are you on that?
Well, actually, the backstory on the Dubai Ports issue is that as part of the agreement, there was a tremendous amount of additional security measures that were going to be implemented at those ports. We would have been safer if the guy cashing the check at the end of the day happens to be from whatever country. And by the way, these were British-operated ports at the time anyway. They were not U.S.-operated. We're safer, whatever country he's from, if there's better security in place at the port itself. And as a result of the deal being squashed, a lot of those additional non-required but additional security measures that the company was willing to pay for have actually been dropped. And so I think we're actually less safe. I also think that when it comes to port security, there's been a big problem, and I do fault the administration for this. We have taken a paternalistic, big brother approach where the government will be the solution. And the government only has pennies to throw at a dollar at a problem that's going to cost dollars. This is really expensive, and the private sector has to get fully engaged.
And we've heard certainly New York Democrats say that Homeland Security funding for domestic security has actually been cut in the current fiscal year as more money gets concentrated in the war effort overseas. There was that whole thing about whether New York had any icons or all of that, and, you know, got that Homeland Security money cut. And then Secretary Chertoff acknowledged that total funding in that category of Homeland Security is down while more is going into the war effort. So is that weak on terror?
Well, I think that the issue there, actually, in terms of how the spending is allocated, again, we're talking about pennies on a problem that's going to cost dollars. I mean, literally, they're fighting about scraps. And when they did pass the port security bill the other day, they spent, I believe, $680,000 at one port in Texas, for example. Well, the port next door to them is not any safer than that port. So if you're not securing the whole system, then your system is flawed to begin with. And I think we need to have a real honest discussion in this country about how the private sector becomes the locus of the solution, because they're the ones who derive value from this system every day. If we're really in a long-term struggle, which everyone seems to believe we are, and I certainly agree with, then we need long-term solutions. The government writing checks is not the long-term solution. There's not enough money in the bank to do that.
We're almost out of time, and Congressman Gerald Nadler will be with us next and answer the question, is either party weak on terror from the Democrats' perspective? But before you go, on the politics of this, what do you make of the changes in the polls recently? As I mentioned, they find for the first time this month that Americans think Democrats would do a better job fighting terrorism than Republicans. As recently as August, the Republicans still had a 5 or 10 point advantage in most of the major polls. Why do you think this has suddenly reversed?
Well, I think it's clearly all tied to Iraq. And Iraq, you know, in a way was, as I say, a national security issue, but perhaps not a terrorism-related issue. Iraq has gone so poorly, it's dragging everything else down. And that's understandable. As I said, it's not that the Republicans have done everything right, but I am concerned about taking a reactive approach to terrorism, putting the State Department back in charge overseas, putting the FBI with a post-event mentality back in charge domestically.
J. Michael Barrett, fellow in Homeland Security at the Manhattan Institute Center for Policing Terrorism. He previously served as senior analyst for the Global War on Terrorism in the Special Operations Division of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and as a counterterrorism intelligence officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency. His new book is Securing Global Transportation Networks, published by McGraw-Hill Professional. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Congressman Nadler next. Stay tuned. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's our 2006 election series, 30 issues in 30 days. Coming up in this series tomorrow, Privatize This, about privatizing the military during the war in Iraq. Friday, issue 25, should the government help pay for your college education? Monday, three men in a room. What will it take to really reform Albany? We continue now with issue 23. Is either party weak on terror? We heard from J. Michael Barrett of the Manhattan Institute, formerly of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the Bush administration. Now, Democratic Congressman Gerald Nadler of Brooklyn and Manhattan. And Congressman, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
So Democrats usually have to play defense on this question. I know you were en route when J. Michael Barrett was on.
But we listened to him a little.
You heard some of it.
Yeah.
So the arguments usually go, you know, that you things that you think are over the top, like warrantless wiretaps or redefining torture or other things that the Democrats say are too tough, the Republicans say, you bet we're tough. It's to keep Americans safe. So are Democrats the softer party, even if you think you're more principled?
No, I don't think the Democrats are the softer party, and I don't even think those are the major issues in the war on terrorism. I mean, those are the major issues in the war on the Constitution. But the Republicans don't, and certainly the Bush administration, in my opinion, doesn't take the war on terrorism seriously. If they took the war on terrorism seriously, we would deal with the major threats to the United States, which we're ignoring. The biggest threat we face is that Al-Qaeda or some jihadist group like it gets nuclear weapons. Imagine a nuclear 9/11, God forbid. The technology is all over the place for nuclear weapons. The thing that keeps you from having a nuclear weapon is that it's very difficult to get fissionable material, highly enriched uranium, plutonium. The easiest place on the planet to get it is the former Soviet Union, where there are tons of the stuff, enough by some estimates to make 40,000 bombs, lying around, not properly guarded, without proper security, waiting to be sold in the black market. We have a program to get it out of there called the Threat Reduction Initiative of Known Luger. We're not funding it. We, at the rate we're going, it'll take us 30 years to get that stuff out of there. If we don't get it out of there, Graham Allison, the author of Nuclear Terrorism, The Preventable Catastrophe, the professor at the Kennedy School at Harvard, flatly predicts nuclear explosions in American cities within 10 years if we're not serious. We removed more nuclear material from the former Soviet Union in the 5 years before 9/11 than since there. Democrats say spend the $15, $20 billion it'll take, get it out of there fast, number one. Number two, the other big danger we face is that some terrorist group takes a nuclear bomb or something like that, puts it in a shipping container, not in a missile, because a missile has a return address. We'd clobber whoever launched it. 12 million shipping containers a year come into this country. We inspect 5% of them. We had a party line vote on the floor of the House on my amendment that said no container should be put on a ship bound for the United States until it's electronically scanned in the foreign port. Not here. It's too late once it gets here. Until it's electronically scanned in the foreign port, that scan sent real-time electronically and inspected to the United States, and a tamper-proof seal be put on that so that it can't come here. The Republicans don't want to spend the money, and they won't spend the money, and they won't make their friends, the big campaign contributors of the chemical companies, spend the money to harden the chemical plants against sabotage that could kill thousands of Americans. Those are the real issues in the war on terrorism.
One argument against that approach is that you can focus a zillion dollars, you can spend the whole national treasury on making ports really secure or making chemical plants really secure. There are always going to be ways for determined terrorists to get through. So what you really have to do is go after the terrorists.
Well, you have to do both, obviously, but you don't leave yourself totally open. You know, when the Republicans opposed inspecting, electronically inspecting, as some people are doing in Hong Kong, partially now, all the containers, they said they said let's do a study amendment. So they put an amendment in to study the feasibility. They don't understand. In 1942, we built aircraft carriers and submarines. We didn't study the feasibility of building aircraft carriers and submarines, and all they're doing is they don't want to spend the money. Now, yes, they have done some things. And now let's get to the issues you were talking about with Mr. Barrett
before.
Detainees. No one is opposed to surveillance. And the issue is not should we wiretap. Of course we should wiretap. And the issue isn't even should we get a warrant before we wiretap, because the FISA Act, which was passed back in 1978 to govern this sort of thing, says that in an emergency, and you don't have to prove it's an emergency, you just say it, you can get a wiretap, you can get a warrant 72 hours after you begin the wiretap. And if the administration said, hey, 72 hours is too short, give us a week, give us a week and a half, we'd have said, fine, that's not the issue. The issue is they don't want to ever be able to get to have to go before a FISA court or anybody else. And Mr. Barrett said it's hard to get. 17,000 wiretap warrants have been granted over the last, I forget how many years. Five were refused, or six. Out of 17,000, it's very easy to get them, but there has got to be some check on the executive branch. That's our tradition.
So on those kinds of issues, if compared to the president, you're more in favor of erecting barriers to surveillance,
Not in favor of erecting any barrier to surveillance. We're in favor of saying, that's not right. We're in favor of saying that if you want to have surveillance, the Constitution demands, all our traditions demand, that you show a neutral judge in secret why there's some reason to believe that you may be looking at a terrorist.
But I understand, and more restrictions on tough interrogation techniques, more rights for terrorism suspects to make public the evidence against them. I'm just going to finish the list. Mm-hmm. The same union rules for Homeland Security employees as any other federal worker.
Well, that was a 5 years ago issue.
I understand, but they won a lot of elections on that in 2002, mm-hmm. and they would say that's part of a package that even if you're morally right about the trade-offs, does that not add up to weaker on terrorism than the GOP?
It does not add up to weaker on terrorism at all, because all it really does is say that the president is not a dictator, that for surveillance he's got to get before or after the fact an okay from a judge in a secret court, judges who've said yes 17,000 times and no 5 times or 6 times. That's just American tradition. It's saying that with the detention bill we just passed, the worst thing from my mind in that bill wasn't the torture provisions. The worst thing was that we said that the president has the power to point this finger at anybody in this country who's not a citizen. My grandmother, before she became a citizen, anybody who's been living here 30 years, and say, you're an enemy combatant. Why? Because I say so. And because I say so, we're going to throw you in jail forever with no opportunity to say, hey, it's someone with a similar name. It's a mistake. It's not me. With no opportunity for a hearing, for a statement of charges or anything, just like the Desaparecidos in Argentina. You can throw someone in jail forever. Since Magna Carta 800 years ago, no one in an English-speaking country has claimed such power. We rebelled against the King of England in 1775, and one of the complaints in the Declaration of Independence was he has denied us the right to trial by jury. So now we're saying that people have no right to trial or even arraignment at all. They can just disappear forever. That's a power only a Stalin should want. It is not necessary. There has got to be some check on a president's power so he's not a dictator, but that doesn't detract in any way from our ability to protect ourselves against the terrorists. What detracts from our ability to protect against the terrorists is that we don't search the containers and we don't get those loose nukes out of the Soviet Union.
But now you're calling President Bush a Stalin for not wanting to give all the rights of a jury trial to people captured.
I didn't say all the rights of a jury trial
on a battlefield.
I didn't say all the rights of a jury trial. I said that we complained against George III for a jury trial, but I said that you've got to have some, and the Supreme Court said this, you've got to have some rights. The Constitution says you cannot suspend the writ of habeas corpus, which we've enjoyed for 800 years, except in case of invasion or rebellion. And the courts have ruled since the Civil War that means only when there's such chaos, the enemy army is in the next county, that the courts cannot function.
Wasn't 9/11 an invasion? And the people that we're talking about make up, at least allegedly, the enemy army?
Well, I would say if I don't know whether 9/11 was an invasion, but if it was, it was a momentary invasion. The United States is not under invasion today. The courts function. The courts function. That means it. Now, it's one thing to pick up, I mean, the president makes no distinction. It's one thing to pick up someone on a battlefield in Afghanistan with a rifle in his arms, or even without a rifle in his arms, and say he's an enemy combatant, then he should be treated sort of like a prisoner of war. We don't give him trials, etc. It's another thing to pick up somebody who is peacefully living in New York or Chicago and say you're an enemy combatant, and maybe he is, and maybe he's not. But because I say you're an enemy combatant, I'm going to throw you in jail and give you no opportunity to say you got the wrong guy. That's not America.
Congressman Gerald Nadler, my guest on WNYC. Issue 23 in our 2006 election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days, is Either Party Week on Terror. I think you were kind of sounding like what J. Michael Barrett said was one of the camps of the Democrats that he didn't think you were in, which was the one that thinks that terrorism is actually not that big a threat.
Oh, on the contrary. Terrorism is an extreme threat. But the threat is one that has to be met by things we're not doing. I mean, the threat has to be met by the fact, by inspecting all the containers, by hardening the country, by hardening the vulnerable points. You go along the turnpike a couple miles from where we're sitting, and you see all those tanks. Anybody puts a hole in those tanks with a rocket-propelled grenade or a shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missile from a car on the turnpike, you kill 100,000 people from the gas wafting in the air, an artificial bow pile. That we have to protect ourselves. But the Republicans defeated legislation because the chemical companies don't want to spend the money. Now, either make the chemical companies spend the money or have the government spend the money, but someone's got to do those elementary protections and protect the nuclear plants and get a hold of the loose nukes before we have nuclear 9/11s and inspect the containers. And there are a lot of other things we got to do. And yes, go after the terrorists. The worst thing the Republicans have done, or one of the worst things they've done, it's hard to imagine which is worse, is that because of the stupidity in Iraq, they took the troops out of Afghanistan, and Osama bin Laden, who we were going to get dead or alive, is still there. And Afghanistan, because we only have 12,000 troops there, we ought to increase the troops in Afghanistan, is turning into a terrorist state again. Those are things which really endanger us. The once-in-a-million difference that the whole habeas corpus might make in something is minor, except that it's major in terms of American liberty.
On Iraq, the previous guest seemed to be saying it may not have been the greatest strategy in the war on terror to go into Iraq in the first place, but here we are. It has become the central battleground for al-Qaeda as far as they're concerned. And so to pull out before attaining victory, however we define that, would be to cut and run, as the president calls it, because it hands al-Qaeda a victory in Iraq as it is today that would wind up hurting us in the war on terror. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think it's nonsense. First of all, Iraq is not the central battleground of the war on terror, even though the president keeps saying it is.
He's saying al-Qaeda considers it.
Well,
so they're getting all these jihadists from all over the world to go there, and that's where they can defeat America if they get us to
the American military's estimate is that 6-7% of the people we're fighting are foreign jihadists. 6-7%. Most of the people we're fighting, 93%, are local Sunnis, local Shias, whoever, who are fighting us because they see us as an occupying power in their country. The Sunnis want to get power back. The Shiites, now you've got a civil war, which is a whole different thing. Yes, let me put it this way. Let me be very blunt. Invading Iraq was stupid in the extreme. It was not a threat to us. Saddam Hussein was a standard fascist thug, of whom there are 40 or 50 running countries in the world. We know how to contain them. We know how to control them. They were contained. They were controlled. They were not a threat to us. And they were a major imbalance of power against Iran. Iran is a real threat to the United States. And by invading Iraq and eliminating that regime, we liberated Iran to be a much greater menace to us, to Israel, to our other friends in the Middle East, and a real terrorist menace. So they're a much greater menace because of Iraq. But we've gotten into a civil war situation in Iraq. And there, at least, I was just reading this yesterday, an article that said there are four different civil wars going on in Iraq. We're not going to solve it. And the fact is that, yes, if we pull our troops out, there will be a catastrophe there. If we don't pull our troops out, there will be a catastrophe there. I would rather pull our troops out with 2,700 Americans dead than with 12,000 Americans dead. Recognize that the stupidity of the Bush administration has created the catastrophe. There's nothing we can do about it except to minimize it and focus our efforts where it really counts. In Afghanistan, and the other things that I was talking about in the war on terror, spend the money on protecting the United States instead of on fighting, getting in the middle of a civil war between the Shiites and the Sunnis, which we're not going to solve.
And so if Al-Qaeda holds that up, if we go your way, and Al-Qaeda holds that up as a great victory showing the weakness of the United States and uses that as a further recruiting tool, as the National Intelligence Estimate says they would, how does that stand us in the war on terror?
It's an unfortunate but probably inevitable byproduct of the Bush stupidity in getting in the first place when he didn't understand what he was getting into. But you have to write that off and not spend thousands more American lives and hundreds of billions more American dollars on something that's going to happen anyway. The Iraqis are going to have their civil war. It's unfortunate. We should have left them in place, but they're going to have their civil war. The Sunnis want control again. The Shiites aren't going to give it to them. The Iranians are allied with the Shiites. By the way, you could argue that from American national interest, we're on the wrong side of the civil war.
How do you mean?
Because we're supporting the Shiites, because they had the most votes, but we're supporting the Shiites. They're allied with the Iranians, who are the major menace. That's crazy. We would be in a better position if the Sunni Ba'athists took over again than if the Iranian allied Shiites took over. Now, it's not up to us to decide that. But I don't see why we should have American boys die and expend hundreds of billions of dollars to help the Shiites against the Sunnis.
We have 2 minutes left. One other thing that I've heard from Republicans on strength on terror is that they say the first 100 days agenda that the House Democrats have put out under leader Nancy Pelosi focuses mostly on domestic issues, the minimum wage, help paying for college, stem cell research. It's not a let's win the war on terror oriented priority list, they say, if the Democrats take control.
But that's not true. Part of that first 100 hours list is to implement the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, those that haven't been implemented. Those recommendations include such simple things as getting interoperability of radio and things like that, but also include inspecting all the containers before they put on a ship bound to the United States and getting a hold of the loose nukes quickly. Those are the two major things in the war on terror. Either of them is far more important, frankly, than anything that happens in Iraq.
And they are on the first 100 hours
list?
Yes,
they are.
Before you go, you've been in Congress for a while. Would you be in line for any committee chairmanships if the Democrats take over?
I'd be in line for the chairmanship of the subcommittee, a part of Judiciary Committee, the subcommittee on the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean, this harkens back to our issue yesterday, that you'd be involved in investigating the administration with aggressive oversight, possibly even with an eye toward impeachment?
Well, I don't know about an eye toward impeachment. I'm very skeptical. Well, certainly investigating the administration. We would my subcommittee and the overall committee and how we divide the work, I don't know yet. Would certainly want to investigate the warrantless wiretapping. I would certainly want to investigate, unless they gave it to some other committee, whether they lied to get us into the war in Iraq and so forth. Impeachment, I don't think, and I don't think for a very simple reason. If we go and do the investigations that ought to be done, okay, either we'll find out that there were no impeachable offenses or there were. Take the worst case scenario. Let's say we find out and we have real evidence that there were a lot of impeachable offenses committed. The next normal step would be, okay, let's get a resolution from the House to empower the Judiciary Committee to launch an impeachment inquiry. By the time that happened, we'll be in the middle of the next presidential election campaign, and at that point, I think Democrats, anybody else would say, there's no point going into this.
We got a lame duck.
It's not just a lame duck. You're in the middle of the presidential campaign. What's his name is running against what's his name, and don't distract from that.
Congressman Gerald Nadler, Democrat from Manhattan and Brooklyn, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
And that's today's 30 Issues in 30 Days. Let other media wallow in the polls and the attack ads. We've got issues, and we know you do too. Tomorrow, issue 24, privatizing during the war in Iraq. And coming up next, three historians who contribute to a new book called I Wish I'd Been There, and we'll take your calls on the moments in history you wish you could travel back and see. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org, and thanks.